Welcome back to the Compass Podcast. Today on the show, we're joined by Camden Spiller, CEO of Maddox Industrial Transformers. We talk about electrical infrastructure, including the consequences of the pandemic, tapering demand from Bitcoin miners, and how demand destruction is easing production concerns. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Foundry Digital. The future of digital asset mining calls for top technical talent. As a premier training and education program for professional mining technicians, Foundry Academy answers. From hands-on ASIC labs taught by industry veteran instructors to coursework covering Bitcoin's global impact, Foundry Academy graduates acquire the skills facilities need to be off and mining. They've even built OSHA 10 certification into the curriculum. Open to all who hold a high school degree or equivalent, the next one-week course taking place in Rochester, New York, runs September 12th through the 17th. Visit foundryacademy.com to register or reach out to academy@foundrydigital.com. Camden, welcome to the Compass Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Will. It's great to be here. Is it a how are things in Denver?
You know, it's hot. It's hot all across the U.S. right now, but I don't love it because Colorado's not supposed to be like that. Most people think this state is completely covered in snow, and it's true for parts of it. But the eastern slope where I'm from gets pretty hot during the summer, and it's only been getting hotter like every summer, I feel like. And I'm a little over it, but yeah. How about things on your side?
Yeah, no, it's great. We're right out here. I'm out here right just north of Portland, Oregon. So it is nice and cool, 60s, and it's beautiful to be out. But we've got a lot of our team in Texas right now, and Texas and South Carolina. So we've got big projects in both places right now. Yeah. So that heat is certainly not good on electrical infrastructure. So it's stressful on us to say the least.
Yeah, no, that's great. We've talked about that so many times on the podcast the last 4 to 8 weeks is this big North American heat wave. And maybe it's not really a heat wave, it's just called summer, right? When we got a lot of Bitcoin mines for Compass have problems with it. And then, you know, there's miners all over the industry. The public miners, we get some nice information from them when they disclose their investor notes at the end of the month. And you know, a lot of them have been suffering from offline time just because of the heat. And it's just part of the game. From the electrical standpoint, that's interesting as well. So you guys have teams in Texas and South Carolina. Let's actually delve into it. Maddox itself.
Yeah. So just to give you some background. So we, our business is exclusively focused on industrial transformers. And this primarily has to do with three phase equipment. Your typical pad mount transformer, that's going to be outside of any commercial industrial facility. To our domain here, outside any large mining operation. That's our bread and butter, the liquid cooled pad mount transformer. Of course, we also do the substation transformers. Those are kind of the big guys that would feed a whole array of pad mounts. And the little guys, the little, you know, like your 75 kVA or your small air cooled transformer that's going to be inside. Now, I'm speaking of small, but, you know, small on an industrial scale, you know, something that's providing like, you know, 200 amps or something like that. So, everything along that spectrum is our business. I've been in the space about 20 something years, 24 or 5 years. You know, watching the, I'll just say professionalization of the crypto space has been super interesting over the last few years. You know, we would go to a mining infrastructure conference, 4 or 5 years ago, and it was pretty wild west, man. I mean, there were guys like doing stuff that it's like, oh, you shouldn't do that with that equipment. But it was frankly a little scary. But you know, a lot of the best practices from other industries have come in. Some of this is partly due to the capital behind these projects now. And, you know, the mega mines, the big, you know, the big, highly engineered, projects, which we've been very, very involved with from the start, have imported some of those best practices, really helped to get better system design across the board. So we've kind of been able to be a part of that. And so that's been interesting to watch.
Yeah, that leads perfectly into my first question of just about your guys' business in general. What was your guys' daily activities? Who gets delegated to?
Yeah. So it's a great question. Yeah. Thank you. Crypto mining, we were in this early, just by virtue of our interest in the space. And, we've had several guys who really focused on this space and helped out with some early kind of infrastructure, planning projects. And that enabled us to get an early foothold. But our core business is commercial industrial. So, it's going to be anybody, anything from building a shopping mall that requires, lighting and air conditioning and, all the typical uses of industrial power to heavy manufacturing, that's semiconductor manufacturing or, melting steel, anything, any big power user is our customer. So it's anything from the 7-Eleven to, SpaceX and, NASA stuff. And of course, the Tesla projects have been fun lately, kind of high profile projects. But it's a lot of, real non-sexy stuff too. It's like, the warehouse for, a distribution center or, all that kind of stuff. So the crypto, the mining space is something that we were early in and have a big presence in. I think we put about 1.5 gigawatts online this year, year to date. We kind of pay attention to what we're doing, and I don't really have numbers on, what other guys are doing, but we think that's a lot. It sounds like a lot to us. So
yeah, no, it's interesting that you guys work with such a wide swath of electrical infrastructure needs.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. And I think that's been helpful as we were talking about before about kind of importing best practices from other industries to the crypto space. That's where we've been able to play that role because, we see, certain things done on other heavy demand projects and can help kind of translate some of that in crypto design. But it's everything on the demand side and then also on somewhat on the generation side. We'll work with solar projects or some amount of wind projects, but those guys are kind of doing the inverse thing. They're instead of consuming power, they're producing power, but it all needs to be transformed to go on or to come off of the grid. And so we're on both sides of that.
Okay, this is leading me to a question I didn't think I was going to ask, but what has been the experience working with Bitcoin miners? You mentioned a second ago that in the early days it's been chaotic and maybe a little bit dangerous, which isn't necessarily shocking to me. But now, 2022, we have mega mines, right? With 750 megawatts at one farm. Stuff of that size. What has it been like? How have you seen the professionalization? And have you seen sort of gradations of it across different sizes of miners, or is it
definitely
becoming more professionalized just as a class?
Great question. Yeah. So it is as a class and generally, but more specifically, we see, being involved in those mega mines. We see those guys taking seriously, design, let's size the equipment appropriate for the demand. We've seen hard lessons learned. We've seen big projects where guys have burned up, many, many millions of dollars worth of equipment and kind of had a run to failure approach with the electrical infrastructure equipment, in the same way you would maybe treating electrical equipment the way you would treat electronic equipment. And there's some similarities, but there's differences. We've kind of used these analogies of, everybody's comfortable. I mean, I grew up in software and, putting together computer hardware, all that kind of stuff. So I understand. And, we're all very comfortable overclocking a processor. We know what that does. We know the consequences. We know how to, mitigate the effects and deal with it. Overclocking electrical infrastructure. You can say that and you know what I mean, but it's not exactly the same thing, but overburdening that kind of infrastructure is not the same. It has very serious effects. It burns up stuff. People get hurt. So it's something we're very concerned about. We're always trying to make sure that the folks on the ground really understand what they're dealing with. And you had mentioned, you know, do we see a difference in that, that professionalization of user across the spaces? And most certainly, you know, when you've got a mega mine, when you've got, you know, 5 or 6 or 750 megawatts, on the ground, you can afford to have engineers, you know, involved. And that's key. It is, you know, if quite frankly, it is still a new space. And even though we've got great minds on it, we've got great, you know, professional people involved, on our customer side, I'm speaking, folks are still learning, and these are challenging even traditional data center scales. So we're always you know, learning ourselves and trying to work with our customers to figure out, you know, what we can do to help learn together.
I feel like there's a few stories of explosions or fireballs that we can't talk about on the show, but I'm sure maybe one day over a beer we can talk about that.
Yeah. You know, it's one thing we've seen that's really been interesting. This may be a bit of a rabbit trail, but there's been such supply side constraint. You know, we can only build so many transformers in this company. There has been an inrush of imported product that would typically have not been acceptable to the American industrial or utility markets. That's found its way to crypto farms, and that's provided entirely new learning experiences for some folks. So that's been interesting to see, but it's a maturing space. So overall, the space is maturing. We're learning, our customers are learning, and it's exciting to be a part of all of that.
Totally. So let's walk through like your guys' business structure, and then also like how you guys end up selling a transformer from like the beginning stages to when you're sending it off to maybe a crypto farm or working with someone else on selling one of these transformers.
Okay, you bet. So we have, there's kind of three lines of business. There is just custom built transformers. So this is where you come to us and here's a spec. You know, this is the transformer I want. It needs to be built, and that's built at standard lead times. Ours are, you know, are competitive, but right now those are crazy. They're like 30 plus weeks. And you know, depending on the product, I mean, there's some 8 to 10 week product. But there's that custom build. Then there's stock. So this is a unique area that we play in the transformer space, where we're stocking a tremendous amount of inventory that's ready to ship on a moment's notice. So you can buy it custom made from stock or reconditioned. And this has been a part of our business. This is from the very start, but reconditioned equipment has the advantage of immediate availability. And that's why people buy a reconditioned transformer. You know, we see this in a lot of different industries right now. We're part of this thing called the Remanufactured Industry Council, and we see this on every product class. If you're talking about consumer appliances or industrial generators or, you know, whatever it is, the stresses of the supply chain lead a significant segment of consumers to look to reconditioned or remanufactured products just to solve that availability problem. So those are the three ways we go to market. You know, custom built stuff from our new stocking program. That's going to be your standard kind of transformers, and then reconditioned transformers. So that's how we go to market. Who we sell to? It's the commercial industrial space, and that's When we say that, that's in our speak, that's differentiating from utility customers. So the utilities just buy differently. They're, you know, they're buying, you know, many thousands of transformers at a time. They're buying them on extremely low margin at long lead times. You know, they're buying right now for 2025, and we're working with customers that, you know, need one yesterday.
No, that's an interesting conversation point, is like these Bitcoin miners have come in and they just demanded so much resources so quickly just to be able to get more Bitcoin, right? What's it been like working with them specifically? They're obviously trying to push to get those transformers, to get any sort of infrastructure as fast as possible to get those mines up, but you're hitting these supply constraints, right? Where, I mean, you mentioned in the blog post that you published December 2021, and we'll definitely include in today's show notes, you know, 8 to 10 weeks was standard back in the day, but now you said 38 to 40 weeks just to get something. So how is it, what's the experience of working like with these Bitcoin miners who are just probably just demanding these machines immediately?
Well, it's frustrating, and we feel their pain. It's bad. It's really bad. They want to be online quicker, and many times the transformer is the holdup. So it's stressful, man. And you know, just to feel that stress on the other end, certainly, it's certainly something we are trying to respond to just as best we can. But there are some fundamental challenges to it. And a couple of things I mentioned in the article, but I think one thing I didn't even mention there is the regulatory pressures that we have, specifically, not to get too far into the weeds, but specifically with electrical vehicle chargers. So let me talk about that for just a second to kind of introduce an element here. So transformers use there's two kinds of steel, electrical steel. There's grain-oriented steel and non-grain-oriented steel. Non-grain oriented is used for the electrical vehicle chargers that consumes a tremendous amount of the world's supply of that. And transformers themselves require grain oriented. A steel mill has to decide, you know, what they're going to produce. Are they going to produce for EV chargers or for transformers? And the regulatory requirements to deploy so many electrical vehicle chargers in this country so fast are taking away the very scarce electrical steel that is required for transformers. So we're at this breakneck speed of developing out infrastructure in this country to support electrical vehicles. And at the same time, we're really cutting ourselves off at the knees by not allowing enough steel for transformer production, which is paradoxically needed to power those EV chargers. So yeah, it's a real quandary we've got ourselves in. Yeah.
This is interesting. I didn't even know anything about this. So let's riff on it for a second if we can. So steel mills, from my understanding, the U.S. has basically gone through deindustrialization. I mean, I went to school outside Pittsburgh, right? Like, you think of a better place to lay the landscape of deindustrialization, just like relics of steel mills everywhere. And even here in Colorado, there actually used to be a lot of coal and steel production. Pueblo, Colorado was the Pueblo of the West, or was the Pittsburgh of the West. Not anymore, right? So you're probably getting your steel from China, I would suppose, maybe other places. And then we have this regulatory constraint, and you're basically breaking up the market by government mandate. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like, what does it look like from beginning to end? Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming most steel is coming from China.
Well, we're able to actually, there is U.S. source steel, and that's where most of ours comes from. But it's a global market, and it's one of those things. There's a whole space. I'm not deeply involved in the sourcing of those raw materials, but there is U.S. steel production available. This is transformers are very much a global supply chain kind of build up. Everything we have is built here in the U.S. and everything three phase pad mounts specifically are built here in the U.S. But it's really more of a raw materials challenge than anything else. And that grain oriented steel that we need for transformers is just is just a scarce produced commodity. And I guess, you know, it's not itself a raw material, but it's, you know, it's kind of a base component of, you know, like what we're talking about, transformers and EV chargers, all that kind of stuff. So
one more question on, if I can.
Yeah.
If the market was normalized and if you didn't see this huge demand for EV materials from the government mandate, do you think like the price bidding up on these transformers would cause it to swing the other way, where steel mills would probably produce transformers more? Or do you think it's difficult to say?
I do not think that would be the case. And that's because there are really other factors at play here. The ability to take those raw materials and transform them into a finished good, like a transformer, is going to then face labor constraints. And that was kind of the next thing that we see. We've just got a great challenge around the world, but in this, you know, if we were speaking about the North American and the United States specifically, we've got labor challenges, and we've got systemic labor challenges due to our underlying demographics, and that's not an easy fix. It's not a quick fix. So, you know, we've got we see people up and down our supply chain that somebody in a manufacturing facility that, you know, is going to employ 1500 or employs 1500 people right now, and they have 300 or 400 jobs open. Like, they would take 300 or 400 people today. And so once we get past that labor problem, that base material problem, then we've got labor challenges. And then we've got even beyond that, kind of this macroeconomic trend of bringing manufacturing back to the US. And if you think, you know, it's in the news right now, stuff like bringing back, you know, chip manufacturing, right? Let's manufacture some of our own chips, right? And that's I think there's a big project in Rockdale, Texas. There's a big project out here in Portland, Oregon, where I'm at. I think there's something going on in the Akron, Cleveland, Ohio. There's a lot of these fab facilities projects that are going online. Those come onto our radar because they need transformers. But those guys, in terms of just anybody bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., is putting more stress on the need for electrical infrastructure. So it's, you know, you can speak of that. I mean, there's different angles to that. Is that positive or negative? I don't know. That's kind of a different issue. But when we're bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., we have to build infrastructure that we no longer have in this country or at scales that we never had. So that's, those things. So I think if we think at those, you know, what's creating stress on the supply chain specifically for electrical infrastructure, it's probably those three things. It's that base material thing, it's the labor thing, and then it's the just demand that's being driven by the repatriation of industry.
Yeah, let's go through the article a little bit more as well and get more in depth of it, because I'm assuming a lot of the things that you wrote 6 months ago, well, almost 8 months ago now, are the same, but surely some things have changed a little bit as well. So just a quick summary, correct me as I go through this. The two things that you saw off the top were the pandemic from COVID, the fallout from that, both the COVID hitting everyone and then also the response to COVID. And then the second thing was the sandemic, where people are just not working. And there's probably two parts to that. One, baby boomer generation is very large, it's now retiring. The next two generations were smaller, less people in the workforce. And then also perhaps less interest for people just to work these days. And then the other thing was, less babies are being born. So there's a lower population demographic changes, right? So 8 months on from what you wrote here, how are you seeing things from both those two points? And are you seeing things alleviate somewhat for your business or in like the macro environment in general?
Sure. Okay. So let's maybe start with what's not changed. Those underlying demographic trends, you know, birth rates haven't changed, right? Those are things that take a tremendous time to address. And, so that hasn't changed. We can talk about some supply chain stuff, and we have seen some relief there. Let's talk about the demographic thing for just a second. What we're looking at here is underlying demographic trends that have many countries such as our own with birth rates well below replacement rate. This has been known for a long time. A lot of us have been very aware of that. It's not been as bad in the U.S. as it is in some other countries. I think I don't have the current numbers, but I know that in China right now, the birth rate is reported to be 1.1, and that is going to lead to a population of 1.4 million people today to being less than 600 million people in 70 years. So that those kind of things now, 75 years is what the models have run out. That's a, those seem like a long time, right? I mean, all of us are going to be past our Bitcoin mining days at that point, but our kids and our kids' kids, these are things that are going to change the shape of the world, and it will have an impact here in the United States as well. Our birth rates and birth rates plus immigration rates, you know, being as low as they are, do not fall off the cliff that badly, but they do decline. We will have less people, less people in years ahead than we have now. We have a trend that's for population reduction, and particularly as you mentioned, like baby boomers retiring, we're losing a lot of skill and experience and education that is in our workforce today, and it's not being replaced. So those are some of the things that are not changing. And as we look at how we approach maybe energy policy or running our own, you know, running our businesses, how we make decisions, those are some of the things that are helpful to understand, but it's in the category of those matters that just are. We're not going to really do anything right at the moment to change those. When we shift to the other side of the supply chain, the supply chain issues, and we think about those and how we can interact with those, there are short-term things that we can do. We can plan better. We can stock equipment. We can build redundancies and resiliencies into our business planning. For us at Maddox, that looks like stocking a lot more equipment. That looks like building a lot to building to inventory instead of building to order, and that's been key for us. But there's different ways to kind of do that in different businesses. Sometimes you can carry bigger inventories and address it that way. But a service business or other businesses would have great challenges doing that. You mentioned what's changed, and we do see some slowing demand across all manufacturing sectors. The activity is slowing down, and what does that mean for us? We've had I guess at the biggest level, we've had two consecutive quarters of contracting GDP. That's concerning from the big R word. Is it a recession? This is all political.
We won't censor you on the podcast. You can call it a recession if you want.
Well, it's we used to or something that used to, now it's like what is the definition of a recession? And but sure, that's we see that we see certainly a tapering of activity there, and then the reduction of the dip, whatever you want to call it, where we've got the price of Bitcoin right now has moving very specifically to what we're talking about today, reduced demand for transformers, for cryptocurrency mining specifically. So yeah, at the biggest level, we see contraction, and certainly in the little space and in the slice of time that we're in right now, we're seeing reduced demand for transformers for new crypto projects. And that, in contrast to where we were talking, 8 months ago, that allows the transformer market itself to cool off a little bit. And the thing, like, when I look at that as leading this business, I'm selling transformers, so that's great. I want more demand of transformers in that kind of selfish way. At the same time, the market has been so overheated, we haven't been able to provide enough to meet demand. None of us, the entire industry. So cooling off just means having demand that's coming a step or two closer to theoretical maximum supply. So it's not a concern for us in an, oh no, what, who's going to buy our transformers kind of way. It's just actually kind of approximating more of a realistic supply demand match.
Oh, that's really interesting. I haven't thought of it that way. And I would assume most consumers or people who are arm's length from any sort of industry like yourself would expect that a fall in demand would lead to just like really suffering profits. But I guess that's not the case because we're not really seeing demand destruction at this point, or it's just going to take a while to see like a smoothing of demand.
Yeah. Well, so on our business, yeah, like on our side, yeah, it's not, we don't see, our business is continuing to grow throughout this. And we've got so many, we've got regular industrial demand that is so backed up and congested that, we're going to be building a lot more infrastructure in this country for the next 5 years. We don't see any of the macro trends leading to a reduction in a need for transformers. But we're very attuned to what's happening in the crypto space because it does allow us to dedicate more production capacity elsewhere. And we've had even some interesting opportunities lately to buy back some projects that we sold a couple years ago. And this is not, it's not to the blood and the water kind of stage. But there are guys who are highly leveraged and went out there and on, speculation built out, projects, and their production costs, their mining costs, are maybe not viable at the moment. And so, we've been able to buy back some of that equipment, sell it to more, frankly, better run operations. This is weeding out some of the less economically disciplined players, and we deal in surplus equipment and reconditioned equipment as well. So we've been able to help some people trying to get out of a project, sell back their equipment, and we've been able to find new homes for it.
Yeah, there's an interesting parallel between what you're saying right now and what I'm seeing with Bitcoin mining, with ASICs, with other infrastructure, and then even when we get into like the finance sector, where there are some distressed companies, but for the most part, we haven't seen like any like large washouts yet. There's been some rumors of a few liquidations. There's definitely been some distressed assets being sold off, like Celsius Mining, but you could almost say that's not really because of the mining operation. It's entirely because of what else Celsius was up to. But I have not yet seen any large miners or large private miners just completely explode. I've seen or heard of smaller operations that were highly leveraged start selling off their assets and putting themselves in a more competitive position, or just getting out of the business because they weren't ready to jump into it yet. So it's interesting. I'm wondering if it's going to change or turn. And I'm going to throw that question back to you. What would make this market go into blood in the water mode, like you talked about? It seems like for electric infrastructure, it's quite safe because there's been so much pent up demand for years. Like you guys could just continue to stay that. For Bitcoin mining, that's not always the case, right? Because it's so retail driven.
Exactly. No, that's a good observation there, and you're exactly right. In our business, it's not. We love the crypto space. We have been supporters of it from the very start, and will be on an ongoing basis. So we love the space, love working with the people, or like the projects, you believe in what's going on and always want to be a part of that. It's not, if it was to experience a massive contraction, even beyond what we've seen here, we have many other, we have other customers who would easily absorb that capacity. So it's not as vulnerable a situation as a miner themselves, who can be very much very vulnerable, frankly, to energy prices. And that's going to be the main thing, right? I mean, there's always talk of, what does regulation do? Are we talking, mining licenses in Texas? Are we talking, getting legislated out of certain states or jurisdictions? There's some of those threats, but to just the plain economics of it is, what is the price of energy? And that vulnerability is, that's an existential threat to miners. And I don't feel super qualified to speak on that. There's other guys. You've had other guests actually that I've listened to, and I am paying attention, but we're just a small part of this. We're supplying the transformers. So we're in a different situation, a sympathetic, but not directly affected.
Okay. Last question for you. Magic wand, change anything you want within supply chain conditions within your business or within the business that you sell into, what would it be? Like one wish list item?
Well, if I was to put it, and I'll put it directly onto the crypto mining space. Crypto miners use a 240 volt. This is a really simple thing, but all right, you got my magic wand out here. Everybody's using 240 volt power supplies, right? If the entire industrial transformer market in the US uses 277 volt secondary power, and if crypto miners were able to use 277 volt power supplies, any crypto miner could use any available transformer already existing in the supply chain. So that's what I would change. And what that would do is, instead of, we've got a guy, got guys all the time, hey, we need 500 megawatts of transformers transforming from some utility voltage down to 240. Okay, well, I got to build those from scratch. That's going to take me X number of weeks. That's my answer right now. If they could use 277, I would be okay. How's Tuesday? Is that going to work for you? They could utilize the existing infrastructure, and that would not only allow them immediate access to all the transformers in our stocking program and existing in the supply chain, but would mitigate their risk in the sense that if they are having to sell off those assets, they're not custom built crypto transformers. They're now transformers that can be used for the Amazon distribution center or, whatever. They're perfectly exchangeable on the market. So you're going from a custom built transformer specifically for crypto mining to just a garden variety industrial transformer that can be used for any application. That would go a long way to solving the supply chain issues on the crypto side of transformer consumption.
Okay, there we go. Bitmain, WhatsMiner, anyone who's listening to this, you heard it. You got to get that changed. Camden, thank you so much for joining us on the Compass Podcast. Really appreciate your insights. This was a lot of information we have not had on the show today. So really, again, appreciate the time. And
thank you, Will. It's good to be here. Appreciate what Compass is doing, and glad to be here with you today.